One of the most significant and most common mitzvot that we perform is that of Nichum Avelim, and clearly a community is very much formed and founded on the type of sensitivity, the type of ethic of Benan L'Chavero that Nichum Avelim represents. The idea of Nichum Avelim is something that has its root in the Gemara in Sota, the Gemara in Shabbos, and other places as well. And the Gemara tells us that there's a mandate for us to follow in the ways of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu, we should follow God's ways. And the Gemara says, is it really true that we could follow in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's footsteps? In fact, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is an Eish Ochla, Kadosh Baruch Hu is all-powerful. How can we follow in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's ways? So the Gemara says that we have to follow in the midos of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is malbish arumim, clothes people that need protection, so we should do the same as well. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a biker cholim, visit the sick, as we know from his visiting of Avraham Avinu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is kover meisim, buries people that need burial, we should do the same thing as well. And the Gemara says that Kadosh Baruch Hu performs the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, as we see from Vayihi Acharei Mos Avraham, Vayivarech Elokim es Yitzchak, that after Avraham passed away, Vayivarech Hashem es Yitzchak, is that God blessed him, God visited him, and therefore we see that when we perform the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, we are following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed. And this Gemara obviously is so significant because it doesn't tell us or teach us that the way we walk in Kadosh Baruch Hu is through prishus, through separation, or through some, I guess, overtly religious, intensely religious act, but we follow the Kadosh Baruch Hu's footsteps through the acts of chesed. Now, interestingly enough, the Rambam alludes to this Gemara in certain places. But the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Avel, the beginning of the 14th Perek, the Rambam has a different formulation. The Rambam says, "Mitzvah saseh shel divrehem levakir cholim, lenachem aveilim, lehotzi ameis, lehachnas akala," etc., that there's a mitzvah midrabanan to visit the sick, to take out the mace, to help a kala get married. All these are mitzvahs to Rabbanan, and also the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. What's the source for this mitzvah? So clearly the source, according to the Rambam, is that we have to love another person like ourselves. And the Rambam, to some degree, has almost a negative formulation. Anything that you'd want a person to do to you, so you should do for someone else as well. Meaning, think about what you want people to do for you, and then you should follow that. Now, what's worth noting and what's fascinating is the necessity to have two sources. We have a source, again, that this the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, Chnasorchim, etc., is Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu, Balachta Bedurachav, going in the ways of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we also have the mitzvah of V'ahavta L'recha Kamocha. What's the necessity of this dual mandate, this dual obligation? Let's take a second just to analyze and to assess the nature of this mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. The Rambam has a very famous halacha also in the 14th Perek of Hilchos Avel, where the Rambam has these laws of Nichum Avelim. The Rambam says that Yera'el li, it occurs to me, and whenever you see the language of the Rambam, you know that he does not feel that he's on very firm footing. Because if not, he would just state the halacha based on the Gemara. But the Rambam says that it appears to me, and again, this is based on the Gemara and Shabbos, but it's clearly not explicit, that if a person has the option to do the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim or Bikur Cholim, should Nechamas Avelim kodem l'Bikur Cholim, that it's more important, more significant to do the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. Why is that? The Rambam says that when a person visits an avel, so there's a dual chesed, there's a double chesed. There's a chesed imachayim, namely you are comforting, putting at mind the at ease the mind of the mourner, and also you are giving nechama to the mace, that the soul of the mace is there. The soul of the mace needs comforting, and therefore, says the Rambam, so therefore you are giving two forms, two different types of nechama, both to the avelim themselves as well as to the nifter. This would explain, among other reasons as well, why there is an inyan of sitting shiva specifically in the home that the person who is the nifter had lived in and died in, because again, the idea that his neshama is there and his neshama needs comforting, and therefore that very much falls in line with this position of the Rambam. Now, based on that idea, the Rambam quotes another halacha, and this is mentioned in Chazal, that namely, that let's say a person dies, passes away, and he has nobody to sit shiva for him. He has no family, no siblings, no children, no parents, no spouse, etc. So what should you do in that case? So the Rambam says, "Boy masar b'nei adam kisherin v'yoshim b'mekomo koshiva simei havelos." We go to the home of the person who is nifter, and 10 people come, and they sit there almost as a proxy instead of the avel himself, instead of the nifter himself or other avelim. And then ushar ha'am is kapsin alehen. People come and they gather around that person. There's a question discussed in halacha that are these people who come, are they taking the place of the avelim? Are they playing a different role? But either way, we see the idea that people come to the home of the nifter to almost sit shiva for him, to be in his place, and to bring the soul of the nifter some nechama. Parenthetically, this question of whether nicham aveilim or bikur cholim is more important is something that was discussed by many of the poskim. And the Radvaz, here on his commentary in the Rambam, on the Nosei Kelim, the Radvaz says, if it wasn't for the fact that the Rambam said this, I would have a serious problem with it. The Radvaz, even though he lived, you know, many, many hundreds of years later, the Radvaz took the Rambam to task and said, isn't it true that Bikur Cholim is more significant? Because we know the Gemara tells us in the Darim and other places that when you go to do Bikur Cholim, you take away part of the illness of the chole, and therefore it's pikuach nefesh. You're really saving the life of the ill person, and shouldn't that, b'chol ofen, shouldn't that, under all circumstances, be more significant than nicham aveilim, which obviously is important, but it's not pikuach nefesh per se. And this question raised by the Radvaz is discussed at length in the poskim. Now, that being said, I believe these are all sources that people know. The Gemara in Sota, Valach B'Drocha, the Rambam, Mahatrecha Kamocha, the dual mitzvah of Nicham Aveilim. What's not always so clear is exactly what should be happening, how exactly should a person perform the mitzvah of Nicham Aveilim. Why is it not clear? Because the sources themselves seem to paint a somewhat confounding picture. So, for instance, on the one hand, we have the position of the Prisha and others who speak about the fact that the idea or the essence of Nicham Aveilim is just to sit there, and to sit there quietly and to not speak. I'm very much following the paradigm of the friends of Eov who came to visit him, and we learn in the second parak in Eov that the friends sat there for a week, they didn't say anything. Now, we're not totally sure by the end of Sefer Eov whether what the friends did were correct or not. I believe you can go through the Sefer and look at their silence as being in certain ways a mistake. It just led perhaps even more so to Eov then becoming dismayed and angry. But either way, we see that source of the friends of Eov just sitting silently. That's a position that we see, as I mentioned in the pre-show, we see in several of the poskim. And I'll mention to you the source of the pre-show. The Torah in Yerideya Simin Shin Tzadi Gimel brings down a halacha that I imagine is surprising to most. The Torah says, quoting his father, let's read to you a few lines, V'noagin ba'ashkenaz, there was a custom in Germany that on Shabbos, even though normally we don't have avelus before hetzia, public avelus in Shabbos, but ba'ashkenaz, shaha avel holech lebeis hakneses b'Shabbos, the avel would go to shul, v'yachar hatfila yotze ha'avel tchila, after davening, the avel would leave first, v'yoshev lifnei beis hakneses, he would sit outside the shul, v'chol kahal holchin acharav, the rest of the shul would then leave following him, v'yoshvin etzlo, they would just sit with him, v'yomid ha'avel v'holach lebeiso, and then he would get up, he would walk to his home, v'chol hakal holchin acharav, and then the rest of the community would come to the house with him. It's a beautiful, beautiful image of, again, an avel in the middle of Shiva, coming to shul, sitting in front of shul on Shabbos, people sitting with him, then following him to his home, sitting with him in his home. There's something just incredibly meaningful about this practice. Now, the diuk that the Prisha made in this Torah is the word v'yoshvin. I'll read the line again. V'chol hakahal holchin acharav v'yoshvin etzlo. The mourner leaves shul, he sits down outside, the rest of the kehillah, they come outside and they just sit with him. So why is it that it doesn't say v'yoshvin u'medabrin, v'yoshvin something else? Why does it just say yeshiva? Now, it's possible when I first saw this word and the fact that the post can draw attention to it is that normally dibor would be a part of a shiva call or sitting with an avel. But in this case, specifically because it's Shabbos, so therefore all they can do is sit. To talk about it, to wish him divrei nechama, that would be a violation of avelus before hesia on Shabbos. Therefore they just sit. Now that being said, the Prisha there, again, in Simin Shin Tzadi Gimel, so the Prisha gives a different answer. The Prisha says, V'yoshvin sham shah achas, it's just a few line Prisha. It says, Midlo kasav sheyoshvin u'medabrim, it doesn't say that they sat down and they spoke to him. Ela shel besof kasav shemedabrim hashochem b'veizeh yenachun cham. So mikan yesh k'tzah tzmach, therefore the Prisha says, this seems to perhaps be a source, or there seems to be at least a support of the minhag, l'nichem aveilim shalanu, sh'al harov ein ha'avel maschil l'daber klum. The avel does not speak at all, and the menachmim don't speak at all. Rak nichnesin etzlo, v'yoshvin ma'at, they come, and they sit, silently, v'omrim, and they say, at the end, Hashem yinachem cha. Imshar Avele Tzion. Hashem Baruch Hu should give you Nechama with the other Avele Tzion. This obviously is the forerunner for our statement of Hamakom Yerachem Eschem. And therefore, the Prisha says that this seems to be a minhag that we have or that we often see. And the source might be the Torah that just says Yoshvin. Now, this practice, it's not clear if the Prisha supports this practice or not, but clearly it was a practice, again, is a practice of just sitting silently with the mourner. And even though this is not a raya, and perhaps the Rambam didn't mean this, or the other Rishonim didn't mean this, there was an ancient minhag, which I think is very, very beautiful, that when people would come to make a shiva kol, they would sit on the floor together with the avel. And it wasn't about the words, it wasn't about saying the right thing, it was about just sitting there in the low place, connecting emotionally, and that sort of vision of the Rambam and others would seem to support Nicham Aveilim as being a silent but supportive endeavor. Now, forget about the Torah, forget about the Prisha, but the Gemara itself in Brachos and Daf Vavam and Beis seems to say this explicitly. Because Amar of Papa, Papa says, so Agur de Veitamya Shtikusa, the reward for sitting or going to a Beitamya, which in theory means a house of Tumma, a house of Avelus, that the reward comes through Shtikusa. Namely, that the reward is not through coming and saying X, Y, and Z. The reward is coming and sitting silently And again, that would support this practice of the Torah that he's learning from this diuk in this practice of the prisha that he's gleaning from the diuk in the Torah. The Shulchan Aruch is not so clear because the Mechaber says, "Ein ha-menachmen rashai l'tavach." It's a halacha in Moikata and other places. The people who come to sit shiva, the people who come to pay a shiva call, can't speak first. Achi yiftach ha'avel tekeila. The avel has to talk first, and then the menachmen speak afterwards. So the Mechaber clearly is saying that when a person pays a shiva call, they do speak, but the avel has to be the one to initiate the conversation. And then it continues that the avel meisa barosh, the avel sits at the servant in the front. The kevan shenena ha'avel barosha, once the avel indicates that he no longer wants people to be there, so then, therefore, poter es menachemim, einem rashaim leishav etzlo. They're not rashaim leishav etzlo, they're not allowed to sit there anymore. They get up, et cetera, et cetera. Now, on the one hand, we saw, again, this minhag that the preacher records, the Gemara and Brachos, but if you just go through the Mamari Chazal, it seems that when the Tanayim and the Amorayim would come to pay Shivakol, they very much were looking for the right words to say, and they were looking to bring the Chama. So I'll just mention two of those sources, or three of those sources, but I forgot to mention before that another source for the practice of being silent is found in the Medrash Rabbah in Koheles in the third parak where it says, Eis Lifkos, the Eis Lishtok, is a time to cry, this is a time to be silent. So based on that Medrash, based on that pasuk, the Medrash records that one of the Marayim was sitting Shiva because they had lost a child. And another Amora comes, and that Amora was asked to Darshan, to say something. And the Amora responds, and I'm sorry that I'm forgetting the names, the Amora responds, at a moment like this, even the Sefer Torah sits in the corner quietly. Namely, I'm not going to come and Darshan, I'm not going to come and try to give terutzim or explanations. The Sefer Torah itself sits quietly with the mourner. Obviously, in this case, it was an Amora who lost a child, but that might be true in other cases as well. But as I was saying, what we clearly see in Chazal is that this practice of keeping silent was not really either accepted or practiced by the majority of the figures in the Gemara. So let me just mention two sources from the Tanaim. One is the Gemara towards the end of Moed Katan, and most of these Gemaras are paying a shiva call appear at the end of Moed Katan. So Gemara says, Tanar Banan, Kishmezu Banav Shavri Shmoel, that the children of Rabbi Shmoel passed away over a short period of time. So Nichnesu Dalet Dekenim Lenachamo. Four people came to offer him the Chama, Rabbi Tarfo, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Elazar, Ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva. These four Tanayim, these four giants, came to pay a shiva called Rabbi Shmoel. Rabbi Akiva Amar Lahem, I'm sorry, Amar Lahem Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon said, "Du'u shechacham gadol hu baki ba'gados." Rabbi Shmoel is a tremendous hamachacham. He is an expert in agados and in drashos and in understanding the psukim in a more agadic fashion. So al yikanes echad michem l'toch divrei chavero. Let's make sure we don't interrupt each other because, you know, we want to say something meaningful. Let each person sort of have his piece to be said in front of Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara continues. So pasach Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel the Avel, he himself said v'yamar rabu avonosav. So his avonos, his sins, namely speaking about himself, are rabu or I obviously have many, many sins, and therefore takvuhu avelav. Therefore, the avelus has become even multiplied. He's lost more than one child, and hitriach rebosav. And I have bothered. I have made myself cumbersome to my friends to have to come and pay all these shiva calls. Okay, so the Gemara concludes that each Tana tried to say something. So then Rabbi Tarfon v'yomar, Rabbi Tarfon says the following, Ba'achichem kol beis Yisrael yivku es asreifa. So speaking about Nadav Avihu, where it says that Bnei Yisrael were totally distraught about the loss of Nadav Avihu, so he says Kavachomer. Uman Nadav Avihu shelo osu el mitzvah achas, that the Torah only records one mitzvah Nadav Avihu did, but yet Bnei Yisrael still were in such a state of mourning. So kach bonav sher yishmal achas kamakama. All the more so, imagine the effect on Klal Yisrael, that the feelings in Klal Yisrael for your children of Yishmael, who were giants in Torah, so you should just know that Klal Yisrael is feeling your sorrow. Klal Yisrael is shouldering your pain. And again, each Tana tried to give something meaningful, say something meaningful to Yishmael, and again, very much in opposition to the Minhag and the Gemara and Brachos about being silent. Another beautiful source from the Tanayim is found in Avos Rabbi Nosson. Now, Avos Rabbi Nosson records how Yochanan ben Zakkai, when his son died, and tragically, we see so many stories in the Gemara where someone is sitting Shiva because they lost a child. And of course, you know, the Yochanan ben Zakkai had many, many Talmidim, and five significant Talmidim. And the Talmidim came in, and each person tried to give something that is meaningful. Now, the first thing of significance is that the Tanayim, when they were sitting in front of Ruch Mazakai, they didn't start talking. They asked him, is it okay if we speak? Is it okay if we're Omer Dover Echol Lefanecha? Can we speak in front of you? Divrei Tanchumin, so Amar Lo Emor, he says, yep. Please speak. So Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, so he came and he said the following. He said, Emshel Chomashel, let me give an example of what this is, or Elazar ben Azaria, Yochanan Zakkai, excuse me, what is going on in your life? Lamaha Davar Dome, what is it similar to? La'odam Shehizkid Etzlo Hamelach Bikadon. This is an example of a king who gives a commoner a pikadon, and then every day, kol yom hayabocha v'tzoek, the commoner says, oi li, oh, woe is me, emosai etze min hapikadon hazeh. I have the king's precious jewel. When can I go ahead and give it back to him? So Velazar turns to Rav Mazaka and says, Afata Rebbe Hayolcha Ben, you had a child, Kara Torah, Mikra, Nevi'im, V'ksuvim, he was a baki in all the Torah, V'nifter min ha'olam below mum, and he left this world without any blemish. Kishekazarta pitoncha shalin, and you returned, you have returned your precious possession back to the king, whole and complete and pure. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai looks to Elazar ben Arach and he says, "Beni nichamtani, you have given me great, great comfort." Now, as a parenthetic point, this Avos Rabbi Nosson ends with Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai essentially leaving the community of scholars. He ended up living his the last years by a seaside town, town by the sea. And this Tanaic source continues to say that perhaps he was being criticized, or he should be criticized, or perhaps he died almost alone because of his lack of asking for the Beis HaMikdash, instead he just asked for Yavne, et cetera, et cetera. So this statement, beyond the meaningful nature of his relationship with his Talmidim, and beyond the fact that we see this as a source for trying to speak at a Shiva house, it also, like many other statements in either the Gemara or in Tanaic literature, paints almost like a tragic picture of Yochanan Zakkai of the end of his days, perhaps filled with a certain regret, perhaps not having the respect of his colleagues because of what he did. And again, that sort of adds to the pathos of this scene. But again, another source that indicates the necessity of speaking at a Shiva house. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph that the Gemara refers, as we had as well in the Gemara in Brachos and other places, to the Shiva house as a Bei Tamya. Now, the spelling in the Gemara is Tes Mem Yud Aleph, which sounds like it's a takeoff on the word Tamme of sorts. But Rashi and other Rishonim here in the spot explains the word Tamya. The Yesh Omrim Rashi says Bei Taima. It's a house in which you're supposed to give explanations and reasons and try to explain why this happened. You're supposed to give a tam. Beis ha'avel shemat'imim oso bedvarim l'nachamo. You're supposed to make sense of this, and you're supposed to give a tam to this as a way of giving nechama. And Rashi then goes ahead and concedes that there are other sources, for instance, Bereishis Rabbah, where it's spelled tes mem yud aleph. But clearly, Rashi does not have that version. Rashi has Beit Haima, like a house of Tam, again indicating certainly the idea of giving explanations. Now, one last source, but there's many others, is the Tor in Yoredeya in Shin Ayin Vav, which is the major Simen Shulchan Aruch, speaking about Nicham Avelim. And there, the Tor brings down the Ramban. The Ramban, of course, wrote his masterpiece, one of his masterpieces, a sefer called Torah to Adam on the laws of Avelos. The beginning of that sefer is Shar HaGamul, which speaks about reward in the next world. And the Ramban says that there was a minhag b'yimei rabosai that they would bury the person, and then they would sit next to the kever, and then everyone would come. And shura after shura, line after line, as we have in the Mishnah and the Gemara. And then people would try to speak to the Avel. And they would speak about Tchiyas HaMesim. They would speak about the fact that this is not really death in a meaningful way because the soul lives on. They would speak about God's righteousness. They would speak about all these things. And this was even just moments after the Kfura itself, the Minhag the Ramban said it was to come and to try to speak to them and speak about the world to come and speak about other things of that nature. And this very much is also the Ramban L'shitaso. I mean, the Ramban following the model of the Zohar and the other Kabbalistic literature, speaking about the journey of the soul back to his creator, speaking about the soul which came initially, which was embedded underneath the Kisei HaKavod and then descended to the world and then returns back to the Gan Eden Shemala after it departs this world. And that's to some degree what the Ramban said we would speak to the Avel about that journey of the soul. And again, this sounds very comforting and it sounds very meaningful, but it's very much in contrast to the Gemara in Brachos and the Prisha and the Medrash in Koheles of just really staying quiet at the Beis HaAvel. One last source, we've mentioned the Zohar. The Zohar says in Parshas Korach, what exactly was wrong with what the friends of Eov tried to do? We see they were criticized at the end. It seems we read through, you know, all of the Parakim in Eov from Perek Dalet to Perek Lamaches, that the friends were giving good arguments. That obviously if you're punished because there was sin, God wouldn't do it for no reason, et cetera, et cetera. But what was wrong exactly? So the Zohar says, the Hachavraya di Eov havo amre mi lekishot. So they were speaking truth, but they were not able to say it in such a way, they were not able to speak to him in such a way, they were not able to communicate to him in a way that brought him nechama. Begin to buy milin dihu yode alayhu. The necessity was to find the right words that Eov would give hodah to. So it wasn't as though what they said was wrong, and it's not that it's wrong to try to comfort the mourner with words, but just they were not able to do it. For whatever reason, they could not find the right words that Eov could be moded to. Now, that language of the Zohar, that Eov could be modeh, Ukadein Yikabel Ladina, that he could be Makabel Vidin, is something that is discussed by the Poskim. I mostly saw it in the contemporary Poskim, but it goes back longer than that, of the necessity of the Avel to acknowledge and to confirm that he has, in fact, been consoled by the words of the mourners, and the Rav Soloveitchik spoke about, among others as well. So we see, again, not only is there an obligation for the Menachem to try to think about the right words, but it's also incumbent upon the mourner to receive and to articulate that he's received those words as well. This idea of thinking about the right thing to say, again, sort of following in suit with the Zohar, is discussed in the some of the 20th century poskim and the Tzitz Eliezer and the Shevet Halevi, that a person, before he goes into the Beis Avel, so he should think what he wants to say. He doesn't just show up. He doesn't sit quietly. He doesn't just give some type of svara merosho and just sort of say words that are empty. Before they would walk in, they would think what exactly would be meaningful for the Avel to hear. Now, you know, if that's the case, we see again the idea of the necessity of speaking and trying to give comfort, and we see that in many other places in the poskim as well. So which one is it? Do we go based on the Gemara and Brachos that the Agra, the Beit Hamya, Shtikusa, this Minog that we see in the Prisha, the Medrash, or the Kohelet, in Koheles, or do we go based on other statements in the Chazal? So I think the reality is that the real necessity of the Avel is the ability, or the real necessity of the Menachem, or the Comforter, is to really look at and to see and to assess and to really look closely at the Avel himself and to figure out where the Avel is, what he needs, what state he's in. Sometimes the Avel doesn't know this. He doesn't know this himself. And to respond accordingly. And there are times where perhaps the best response is silence. The Avel is exhausted physically and emotionally. The Avel is overwhelmed. And therefore, the best is just to sit. And there's other times where the Avel does want to engage and is looking to have a conversation and perhaps the right words or something that would be comforting. But there's a necessity of truly looking at the person. I think perhaps it's no mystery or it's no coincidence that the person who's able to bring the Chama to Yochel and Zakkai and to say these words of you returning a pure soul back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was from Rav Elazar ben Arach. Rav Elazar ben Arach, who we know was the Talmud, was the student whose view Rav Yochel ben Zakkai had accepted in the Mishnah in Second Perek and Pirkei Avos, where his students are asked to go out and find what is the appropriate derech for a person. So, of course, Elazar ben Arach, what does he say? He says, a lev tov. The other Talmidim said, ayin tov, shochen tov, chaver tov, roos anolad. Because a person with a lev tov has all of those elements. They're a good neighbor, and they're a good friend, and they have a good eye, and roos anolad. Elazar ben Arach, who was perfected in his nature, who could look at Ruch ben Zakkai, who knew that Rav Yochanan Zakkai wanted something to be mentioned to him. He asked permission to say something. And then he was able to verbalize and articulate and communicate very simply but very meaningfully something that, in fact, was of consolation of Rav Yochanan Zakkai. It's the ability of having that lev tov where you can really see a person. And that, in fact, seems to be what the Shulchan Aruch himself says. Because the Mechaber says that we wait, and we sit there in silence, and we assess exactly where the Avel is at, and when the Avel begins to speak, and we can speak as well. These statements, these menhagim, are not contradictions, but perhaps they're speaking about different stages, different types of Avelim, different stages in any given Shiva visit that a person plays. Now, I'm not sure if this is true, but I thought perhaps that is the reason of why we have two sources for the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. One source is that we follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a medaber. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to appear with words, but there's the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is felt by a person. And when we come, again, Imitat Yodei, V'halachta B'drachav, so we come almost in the tzura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of just sitting and bringing comfort through our calm presence. And then, of course, there's the second source, Hatarecha Kamocha. It's action, it's involvement, it's doing something, it's saying something. It exists on the human level, which often is defined by Dibor. And maybe that's why we need both sources. Sometimes we come as a Kadosh Baruch Hu silently, a silent presence, and sometimes we come as a friend with words and with Dibor as well. I was wondering along the same vein, perhaps that's why we have so many different interpretations of Hamakom Yinachem Eschem. Sometimes Makom, according to some, really most Mefarshim, Hamakom is talking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that Hamakom, the place, the silent place, the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, his makom in the world brings or should bring the mourner comfort. And other times we say, no, Hamakom is speaking about Yushalayim, speaking about Klal Yisrael, speaking about something that's very active and very alive and very much in the tzura, the tipus of Dibor, and sometimes that's what we express to the mourner. Hamakom Yinachem Eschem, that society and community in Klal Yisrael should bring you comfort. Again, the idea is to have the lev tov and to really see another person and to empathize with another person. You know, on this topic of empathy, I was reminded recently of a story that happened to the great C.S. Lewis, and this is documented in the book Shadowlands. Of course, you know, C.S. Lewis was a theologian par excellence, someone obviously a Christian, but who very much communicates in a meaningful way the language of finding and connecting to God. And C.S. Lewis was a bachelor for most of his life. And towards the end of his life, he met a woman by the name of Joy Davidson. They very, very much were in love. And after only 3 years of marriage, so Mrs. Davidson, or Mrs. Lewis, she had cancer and she passed away. And C.S. Lewis was just distraught. And he mentioned that before he had this tragedy in his life, and before he was perhaps even married, when he would speak to people about pain and suffering, he would say that suffering is the divine chisel that forms us into our best selves, namely that's the purpose of suffering. C.S. Lewis says, once I've gone through this myself, I'll never utter those words again. And not that he didn't believe those words, but he knew how enormous the loss was, and those words describing suffering as divine chisel simply does not speak to the enormity of loss in certain situations. Now, I love that story, because it indicates the necessity, and this is what we saw in the postgame about formulating one's thoughts before they walk into a shiva house, of just being able to really empathize and be able to really see and be able to connect. And part of that is the ability of A, being silent, but it's the ability of being in a deeply emotional, serious, and intense place. You know, often I go to shiva houses, and perhaps if there is thought behind it, then the thought of some menachmim is, let's go and pay almost a social visit to alleviate the suffering, to alleviate the heaviness, the long hours of sitting shiva, and we'll go and we'll talk about whatever there is to speak about. And the truth is, sometimes that's initiated by the Avel himself. That is an absolute mistake. It's probably against halacha. But it also reflects, perhaps, man's inability of just sitting silently or sitting in those very, very deep, serious, intense feelings that are often engendered and should be engendered by the shiva house. If we continue to think about these issues of ways of inculcating the Lev Tov, of thinking about ourselves as being HaKadosh Baruch Hu's representatives in this world of bringing the Chama finally. If we think about the responsibility of being part of Klal Yisrael, of the Nishmas Yisrael, of being there through words or through other means, we continue to develop ourselves as people who are looking to perfect themselves. And through that perfection, we continue to bring Nechama to individual people, Nechama to the world, until Mir Hashem we can see a day of full Nechama, a day of Mach Hashem Dima Mikolei, that a day of no more tears. We should be zocheh to see that day, Bikarov. Thank you for listening.